Hi guys, this is Nadia Hilker. I'm playing Magna on The Walking Dead, and you guys are listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast, and I'm sending you all my love. Bye!
Hello, my name is Cassie McClincy. I play Lydia on The Walking Dead, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through. Yay!
Hey there, guys. I'm Callan McAuliffe, and you're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Hey, I'm Lindsley Register, and I play Lara on The Walking Dead. You're listening to The Walking Dead Talk Through on Talk Through Media.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of The Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Brian.
And I'm Mark.
And we are here with a very special interview. We have Lindsley Register, who is formerly of The Walking Dead up until recently. And she's got a new film that she wants to talk about. So both Mark and I have had a chance to see it in the last couple of days. So welcome, Lindsley. How you doing?
Thanks. I'm doing really well. This is like, it's such a weird time. So it feels like such a loaded question right now when you ask somebody how they're doing, you know, because it's like good and bad and weird and unusual. And I can't wait for this to be over. But I just found out we're looking at 3 more months of this in California.
Yeah, I heard.
So I'm just like trying to not resist it, you know, just like go with it. It's just a lot though.
Yeah.
But you've been keeping yourself busy, obviously.
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, how have you spent the time, you know, so obviously you can't work on any movies or anything like that. Are you just kind of working on your craft from home or just doing other stuff or what?
Yeah, some of that. I have been doing like a lot of reading. I've been doing a lot of reading, playing the piano, binge watching tons of stuff on Netflix. Like a lot of actors are doing meet and greet, like Zoom sessions with casting directors right now, a little bit of writing. Like I tried my hand at painting, like you name it. And I feel like I've done it during quarantine. So
awesome.
Very cool.
Plus you're promoting a new movie.
Yes. Called Scorn. So, you're like in this new movie, Scorn, you are like in like 3 different roles from what I saw as actor, you know, as the lead, as producer and executive producer. So why don't you tell us a little bit about like how you got involved with this project and the number of hats that you wore? I'm curious about that.
Yeah, it was a lot of hats. And it was my first time ever attempting to take on that much at once. You know, it was 4 years ago. So I love to say like, I was young and naive at the time. I was so much younger than now.
Oh, it was 4 years ago. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
pretty cool. It's been a long time coming. But basically 4 years ago, I went to, one of the strongest writers I know, Jonathan Faircloth Kirk, who I had met in school, and a few other people that I just really wanted to create something with, and basically asked Jonathan to write a crazy good role for me. When you're an actor, you don't get to do what you love to do. It's just so rare, you know, that you actually get an opportunity to act. And I just decided that I wasn't going to wait for somebody to see my potential and cast me in a role, which ended up happening, you know, when I started working on Six soon after, and started working on Walking Dead right after we finished principal photography. But I asked them to give me an opportunity to act and brought some resources to the project as much as I can muster. So that's how it all began, really. It was just a group of friends.
Great. And like, what's the difference between being a producer on the film versus being an executive producer? Because I think most laymen wouldn't get the difference.
Yeah. Like executive producer, what most of my, what I was doing there was bringing resources. So pouring money into the film, having more creative control, maybe than even a producer would have, things like that, making story edits, making notes on the final edit, things like that. As a producer, I was doing a lot of groundwork, you know, in contact with potential filming locations. I was organizing our crew. I was doing like a lot of, you know, like you said, I was wearing a lot of different hats. So as a producer, I was just doing a lot of like groundwork. And it's a lot, you know, but indie film, if you know anything about indie film, it's kind of that's kind of the game when you're on a tight budget and, mm-hmm. you know, you want to be doing it. So,
yeah.
I had a question. As being an executive producer, what input did you have within the actual project itself? I know you were wearing the hats, but what input that, you know, that you've created or directly affected the movie itself?
So what it looked like was when Jonathan would have a first draft of the script, he would send it to me, give input, give ideas, give notes, things like that. When we started to have our first edits, additionally to being a part of that process, you know, larger parts of, story editing, really.
Okay. Awesome.
Cool. And I noticed that the film was shot in Charlottesville, Virginia. Is that where you were based before or?
I wasn't based in Charlottesville. I was living in Virginia at the time. I grew up in Virginia, really close to the Appalachian Trail. In fact, pretty much on the Appalachian Trail. And was studying in the area. And when we decided to make the film, we just found this incredible house in Charlottesville. It was pretty close to where a lot of us were based at the time, which was Lynchburg. Mm-hmm. So it's about an hour and a half away. And if you guys haven't been to Charlottesville, it's a really cool area, like yeah. really interesting artsy downtown scene. And so it ended up being a great spot for us to make the movie.
Hmm. Interesting. Whenever I think of Charlottesville, I think of the Waltons because there was a lot of Charlottesville was mentioned a lot in the Waltons, but I'm giving away my age. We'll circle back to Scorn in a minute, but you know, we're a Walking Dead podcast, so we better get on the Walking Dead. So I am curious how you got the role as Laura on the Walking Dead.
So basically how it works is like my agent will send me appointments. I don't really go out and, or I don't go out and look for roles. I don't get to pick what I'm auditioning for largely. So one day there's just an email in my inbox. It's like, hey, you have a self-tape request for The Walking Dead, which I mean, actors these days really don't go on many in-person auditions. Most of the time it's just me with my iPhone at home in front of my living room wall, filming myself, act a scene that was sent to me and I send it away. And, you know, 99% of the time you don't hear anything back. You don't hear any critique. You don't hear any notes. And so this one in particular, so you get very used to just sending off tapes all the time. Like every week I'm just sending off an acting scene and I do not get attached and I don't think about them. Otherwise your hopes are just shattered all the time.
Are you still sending off like physical copies or is it like, are you like sending them like digitally. Unlisted YouTubes or something like that, or, you know,
normally like WeTransfers.
Oh, okay.
Like they're very picky about how you send them.
I figured
that. Yeah. Cause it can't be anything that could ever be accessed. Mm. Yeah.
Gotcha. Awesome.
Yeah. Normally WeTransfers. So yeah, it was just me. I think I was visiting my parents at the time. I shot it in their office. I sent it off and was like, oh, that's cool. Auditioning for The Walking Dead. That'd be fun. I didn't really expect to hear anything back, you know?
Did you know much about the character that you were playing?
No. Not much at all. I auditioned with fake sides. So it was like a fake made up scene, nothing that ever made it into the show. And I just got like a sense of, fake name too. I just got like a sense of what kind of character they were looking for. Mm-hmm. She was kind of like this tough, but like she was kind of playful in the sides. That's how it was pitched to me anyways. Like, she does bad things, but she enjoys it. And I thought that was like super, like she like kills this guy in my sides that I auditioned with. She like kills this guy and then she's like, oh, damn it. He was cute. Like, you know, so it it was just kind of fun.
What'd you say your favorite scene playing was on The Walking Dead in your four seasons?
Ooh, that's really good. Well, I feel like it probably would be the scene that didn't make it in when me and Eugene made love.
Like, we were going to ask you that.
So it is true that you and Eugene were going to get a little freaky, and we didn't get to see it. Why didn't they show that?
I think it just would have been, you know, like too much for you guys. Your minds would have like exploded. You know, it was too hot. It was like too sexy television. So,
with that missing scene with you and Josh, did Josh make you laugh during the scene, or did you make Josh laugh at some point while doing that scene?
Josh is so serious on set. He's, you know, really? Like very serious.
Really?
Actor. Yeah, I love it. He's a real actor, that one. And so he took it very seriously the whole time. You know, I'm like just trying to hold it together. You know, I'm super nervous. I've never filmed anything like that. So it was a little nerve wracking. And, you know, they're like, "Hey, you want a grilled cheese, Lindsay?" And I'm like, "No, I don't want a grilled cheese. I'm, you know, in my underwear on like national television right now." So no, but I think he made me laugh more than that. I made him laugh in that one.
What season was that going to be in? Is that season 8 or 7?
8.
8.
8. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm very curious about it now.
I know all this stuff that you guys will just like never see. That's just like goes off into the oblivion. Like it never happens.
So aside from that scene, what was your favorite scene that we did get to see?
I think maybe the scene when I got to shoot Dwight. I really felt it was nice to get to like have some action for once, you know, to really get a piece of it. So that was really fun for me. It felt like a big moment for my character, which I kind of thought it was this moment where there's like, oh, well, there's no turning back now. I mean, she's bad. Like she shot, you know, the double agent. So, which ended up not happening, which really surprised me. But I that scene, you know, was meaty for me. Mm.
That was a good scene, actually.
Yeah.
Where is that coming from?
Outside our window.
I think there's a motorcycle outside.
Ah, okay. First it sounded like a flushing toilet, and then it sounded like an airplane. But
oh, then I mentioned I'm like, you know, kind of like multitasking.
Yeah,
good old Zoom calls. What about the you had the what I used to call during the episodes the barcode tattoo. Obviously it wasn't a barcode, but and you had the nose piercing and all that. So like how much of that was, did you have any input on what you look like in the show? Or and you used to wear your hair back really tight as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have too much input on what Lara's looks normally are. When I first got cast, like you go to the hair and makeup trailer, like before you ever start filming, and they kind of mess around with your look and then take some pictures and get it all approved by Scott Gimple, who was our showrunner at the time.
Right, right.
And so they were like putting these like black, like hair extension pieces in there and, you know, experimenting with my hair. They loved the nose ring. They were like, keep that.
Nose ring already.
Yep.
Yeah. She still
had
does.
The nose ring. Yeah. And, you know, we just decided that Lara is a soldier that's her occupation now. She follows orders. So it made sense that her hair's pulled back tight. Like she's kind of like a no nonsense, like we're here to get the job done kind of gal. So hair back tight. And then the neck tattoo, you know, it came in this collection of what I was told were tribal tattoos. And it was just kind of slapped on my neck and we were like, looks good, you know?
That worked. It actually pinpointed your character.
Did they have to apply that each time in makeup, or was it like temporary or something? Okay. I was curious.
There would be a couple of times when they'd be like, do you think you could like sleep tonight and come back with it on tomorrow? I don't always try and I always fail. And then it took more time than the makeup trailer to like take the rest off and like put a new one on. So, and also like, you don't want me walking around like Peachtree City, Georgia with this like very recognizable tattoo right. of the show. So then I have to hide it. So we always took it off and put it on.
Wear scarves.
Yep.
That works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. In like 100-degree weather.
Yeah. It's for fashion. It's okay.
Yeah. I'm from Hollywood.
Yeah.
Did you get any kind of backstory on Laura as far as, you know, where she came from, or did you like work out a backstory for her?
Yeah. Scott and I chatted a little bit when we first met that day that I was in the hair and makeup trailer. And the only thing that I really remember him telling me about my character was she likes to have fun, which I don't really know that we ever got to see much of. I mean, maybe in little glimpses, but we never really got to see Laura have too much fun, right. which I hoped to bring when I first started in season 7. And, you know, it was just kind of like directed away from that, was pulled away from that. And so she kind of evolved on her own. I did, of course, like as an actor, I always have an extensive backstory for my characters. So I just kind of made some decisions about where I thought she came from and what had happened to her prior to the outbreak.
So what was that backstory that you came up with?
I imagine that Laura was a bartender, that she was kind of used to like giving it to people. You know, as a female bartender, you have to be like really thick skinned. You're like telling, you know, I have to watch my language. But Laura wouldn't. And I just got the impression that she was kind of like a take no shit kind of gal. She could hold her own. And, you know, I wrote about some of her relationships, maybe that she was a bit more vulnerable, and I wanted her to be a real person, you know, even if we don't see all of that on the screen, I think it still matters.
Yeah.
Hmm. I got the impression she was more like a bouncer at a bar.
Bouncer. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because actually the first scene that we see her in season 7, episode 3, you know, which was the cell, but everyone knows it for the Easy Street song.
Yeah, that cursed song.
Yeah, that you were doing like a drinking game with Dwight in that first scene. So
yeah.
So I guess that makes sense.
When we were shooting that, I was shaking in my boots. That was my first dance set.
Oh wow!
So working with. I'm kind of, some of these questions we've got written and some of these questions I'm coming off the top of my head, and this is one off the top of my head. So in the 4 seasons, you got to work with quite a few different actors. Obviously you got to work with Jeffrey Dean Morgan quite a bit, Austin Emilio when he was on Walking Dead, Josh McDermott, et cetera. And then later, you know, some of the Alexandrians. Who did you enjoy working with, especially, like, not to pick favorites, but if you had to single out one actor that you enjoyed working with on Walking Dead, who would it be?
Yeah, that's really hard.
You don't have to be limited to one. You
can, okay, who did you power around with?
Okay. So Kari Payton is just like a ball of fun. Okay. Yeah. What you see like in the BTS is what you get. He's just like a party animal and kind and so sweet. Elizabeth Ludlow, who played Arat, like another Negan soldier, she and I became really good friends and we still hang out like all the time here in LA. But if I could say one more, Austin Emilio was, anytime he was on set, I was comfortable. He's just like a nice guy. He's an easygoing, like, Texan who smokes a lot and gives a lot in his scenes. And if I could work with him again, that would be a dream.
That's cool.
Great. Yeah. That's cool. Now, speaking of Austin Emilio, you were the one that kind of ratted out Dwight. So were you surprised that Laura did that? Or like, 'cause I know as a viewer, we were, at least I was kind of like not sure if she was going to rat him out or if she was going to like take his side with Negan, but obviously she ratted Dwight out. So, I mean, but then you were also like one of the first to surrender at the, I don't know what else to call it, but
Fallout.
Glass windows on the tree feel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So going through that, like, that war was pretty brutal, like, especially for viewers. It was kind of like a long, enduring thing. But, like, what do you think was behind your character kind of changing and, you know, surrendering, I guess? And then we have a follow-up question from someone else. So.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it didn't surprise me when she read it out, Dwight, because the way I saw Lara was that she survived. She got this far by picking a leader and following orders. Like, she really was a soldier. So it didn't surprise me when she stuck to her guns and was loyal to Negan in the face of Dwight. Mm-hmm. But when that happened, I was like, oh shit, I'm done on the show. You know, as soon as Rick, you know, takes care of business, I'm done. I'm gone. So I was like, oh, well, I wonder how my death's going to look. It was surprising to me the way things played out, you know, with some of us going to live there. So again, I guess I'd say I wasn't surprised that she surrendered and was willing to, like, work under new management, essentially. I don't think that she was particularly loyal to Negan from an emotional mm-hmm. place, more from like a, I need to survive
right.
kind of place. And now Rick's the new leader. And so I get in line and I just, like, kind of look out for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, we got a question here from actually a friend of ours, Jason from the Walking Dead cast. You may even know him from Walker Talker Talk. Yeah.
Oh, Jason.
Yeah. Yeah. So he asked this question. He said, I'd like to know if she worked out how her character went from being a loyal and vicious member of the Saviors to being on the community council at Alexandria after the time jump, and what that transformation over the years looked like.
You know, forgive me if you guys have already heard this or if you've already heard this, Jason, but, like, during some of those scenes when I was, like, a council member in Alexandria, like, I think there was a few times where Ross Marquand would, like, look over at me and be like, how the did you get here? Like, what are you doing here? And I was like, dude, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I guess. She must have shown something to prove herself a valuable ally. And maybe that's even, like, double agent is the wrong word, but, like, maybe she brought some sort of savior tactics to, you know, Michonne's world, and that was valuable enough to trust her. Some insights as to how the saviors got to be as powerful as they did. That makes me believe, you know, that she could have gotten there. That, and also it's like they have all these ex saviors a part of their community now. Maybe it was some sort of to keep the peace by having me, like, as a representative of them on the council. These are things that I kind of tossed around in my head.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Now, I guess since you had almost equal time between them,
yeah.
How would you compare the difference in playing a savior versus playing an Alexandrian?
It's so much more fun to play the bad guys. It's like, is like the motorcycle and like the leather gloves and like chasing people down and being just like evil and like fans tweeting you like, I hate you, I hate you. But like,
I saw that at Walker Stalker, the last two in Georgia I saw you at. They would say that. I don't like you. I was like, I it's not her.
I think it's like, who would you rather play, like Joker or like Captain America? Like, which one is more interesting, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's been more fun to play the bad guy. Yeah. I never get to be bad guys. I'm too smiley.
You're kind of the bad guy in Scorn, I guess, but...
Well, that's partially.
True. Yeah.
Partially. Yeah. It goes three ways at that point. Right. You have to realize within that movie.
Amen,
yeah.
Brother.
Yeah.
So.
And the last question I've got with that is that, unfortunately, you died at the hands of Beta when Beta kind of did his, like, personal invasion of Alexandria.
Yeah.
And I saw you were online kind of, like, doing your... You know, I don't know if it was on Instagram or what it was, but you kind of did a video saying goodbye, and I know you got pretty emotional about it. it's all behind you now. So I guess first I'll ask about the death scene itself. Because honestly, I'll just say, like, at first I didn't realize, it's like, did she just die there?
Yeah, we both were like that. What happened?
Yeah.
We thought she just got knocked down.
Yeah. And then we realized, it's like, oh shit, she died there.
Oh darn.
Yeah. I think it was on Talking Dead that I finally, like, wait a minute, she did die.
Yeah.
So what was that scene like? And you obviously had to say goodbye to all your, you know, cast members and that. We've heard about the dinners. I don't know if that was still a thing. But anyway, just talk a little bit about your like, final days on set.
It was really hard because, you know, I'm feeling like super emotional about it being like, I kind of always refer to like my time on Walking Dead as like going to camp, because sometimes that's what it felt like going to summer camp. Like, you're outside, you're hot, you're uncomfortable, you're getting bit by bugs, but you're like hanging out with your friends and you're like feeling so alive. So it's like, it's kind of like I'm at my last day of camp, but like, I really need to like focus on this scene right now. And I keep having to like put out of my mind that this is like the last time that I'm ever going to be here. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It's like making my nose burn right now, just like thinking about it, because it was just such a special time in my life, you know? Yeah. And filming that scene was so fun. So fun. Like, they put this like belt around my waist and then one around my chest so that he could like actually pick up my like horizontal limp body. And Angela Kang, when they reached out and when they said that I was gonna die, they were like, trust us, we'll make it a good one, we promise. And I was really happy with what they wrote for me. I thought it was like,
yeah,
really gory and violent, and everybody who dies on Walking Dead wants a violent death. And yeah, a lot of people were like asking me, like tweeting, like, wait, what? Are you died? That killed you? Like, what? Like, yeah.
Beta was a force of nature. So I guess.
Yeah, he's a big dude. Yeah. I don't think I stand a chance when he's like throwing my head into a steel bar, you know? So.
Yeah.
But it was so fun, like choreographing that and like doing some of my own stunts. And that was like super fun. And like Ryan, like, asked us to do even more choreography to make it more of a fight scene, which, like, oh my God, like, I just, as an actor, you're really appreciative to anyone who wants to give you more, you know? So that was also really special.
Now, when you were filming The Walking Dead, did you stay in Atlanta during that time, or did you just like go back and forth between LA and Atlanta?
I go back and forth.
Yeah.
It's like March through November. My life belongs to The Walking Dead. Like, I don't know if I can come to your wedding. I don't know if I can come to your kid's birthday party. Yeah. Like, my life literally belongs to the show, and I never knew when I was going to go film. So it'd be like 2-3 days in advance. Hey, you're in this episode. Let's go get on a plane. And I go, and I actually would stay in Peachtree City. Mm-hmm. So it was like the middle of the woods. It was like really rural. And sometimes I would take the hour long Uber to get into Atlanta to, like, you know, do things and see friends. But a lot of time I was like staying in Peachtree City and just like getting drinks with cast after after our days and hanging out.
Oh, cool. We should get back to Scorn.
Yes.
Mark, you had some questions there.
Sure. So basically, the three characters within the movie itself, there was a lot of tension within that at almost every scene, obviously. How did you maintain that throughout? And you said you were filming this, you did it 4 years ago, but did you do it over the course of 4 years, or did you do it at one single time?
We actually shot it over the course of 9 days. And by days, wow, I mean, okay, we shot at night. So we slept during the day, and we got up at night, and we'd film all night, which is an unheard of small amount of time to make a feature length film.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it was difficult, but we made it happen. And as far as keeping the tension alive, I think we were really careful to try and craft like ebb and flows of like dramas, you know, they need comedy, they need breath, they need the dramatic, dangerous moments. And then they also need breathing room. And so we rehearsed it like a play before we started filming, and really tried to capture those moments. Yeah, but we just rehearsed the shit out of it and, you know, tried to make sure it was all there, everything that needed to be there.
And you are a love of the Meisner technique, I saw. How has it helped you with that while you were portraying the character?
Meisner technique, for the listeners who maybe some of them don't know what Meisner is, it's just basically a technique that a lot of, or a practice that a lot of actors will use, and some non-actors do it as well, in order to like break down barriers, to make you more vulnerable, to make you more, to make your emotions more accessible, and to tell, like, work on telling the truth, honestly. So as an actor, and particularly for Zoe, I think that Meisner technique helps me be in the moment and really be able to look my partner in the face and really take in what's going on with them, to really notice when there's a change in them, to really notice when there's like a new moment, when something maybe is underneath the surface of what they're saying, like the subtext of what they're saying. Yeah, I recommend that everybody like look into who Sanford Meisner is. And this is not a cult. This is not like Scientology. This is not next,
like, what's the elevator pitch for the Meisner technique?
Oh God, I don't. It sounds way too cultish. Like, that's why I should just like emphasize. It's like a practice that a lot of actors use, and it's.
Yeah.
Oh God, I'm just floundering, you guys.
So we should give an idea for our listeners and people who are watching this on YouTube. Tell a little bit about Scorn without like giving out any major plot details, like what you play in the film and you know what the basic idea of the film is.
Yeah. So our tagline is Scorn is a story about the ugly things that beautiful people do to each other. And at the time we were making it, you know, we were all heading into what we hoped would be a career in Hollywood, in various forms. I wanted to act. We had a writer, director. We had, you know, a lot of people involved that wanted to work in Hollywood. And we said it was a love letter to our future selves of, you know, what kind of things can happen when you prioritize fame or your desires in general above all else. The story revolves around three main characters: Liam, Zoe, and Merrick. So Liam and Zoe are partners, and Liam is starting to experience some relative success as an actor, which that's bringing some tension into his relationship with Zoe, who is not finding success as an actor. And then one evening after a drunken premiere party of Liam's movie, the director comes over and they have this very long, drug-fueled, what turns into like a caustic evening together where truth just starts spilling out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mark, I think you had a couple other questions as well.
Oh, I have a whole bunch. I'm only going to give you so many depending on what you were willing to answer. So there was a bicycle in a couple of the scenes that Liam rides around. Now, that just reminded me of the same bicycle that Pee Wee Herman rode in Pee Wee's Big Adventure. What was the premise behind having that within it? I know it was way of Liam's way of getting away from the conversation as a distractant, but who came up with the idea of the prop, and was it in there for a goof or a gag or what?
That's a really good observation that like Liam used it to sort of remove himself from, you know, what was going on. He doesn't want to be there for most of the evening, I think.
Yeah.
And my sister said it kind of reminded her almost of like an F. Scott Fitzgerald, like a Gatsby type of move, which I also thought was a good observation because it too reminds me of, you know, something Gatsby would have done in his home. It was our director's idea, Jonathan Faircloth Kirk, who also wrote the script. He's a brilliant writer and we've worked together for a while. We thought almost that we weren't going to be able to bring the bike into this guy's like beautiful home. Cause like, where is their room to ride?
Wood floors.
Yeah. Wood floors. Got a nice house. Like,
well, you broke glasses too.
Those are breakaway.
Oh, okay. So you didn't cut your feet or anything. That's a good thing.
No. Oh, no. Those were fun though. Those were fun to throw.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
My next question, the Gibson. Now, was that a real Gibson that he was drinking, or And was there, did somebody just like Gibsons and they had to have that in the movie?
Gibson Martini as opposed to Gibson guitar.
Yes. I have Gibson guitars, but yeah. I'm talking about the Martini.
Yeah. You know, I don't think any of us actually, so it wasn't a real Gibson that he was drinking, though there were other times in the movie that I believe we were drinking real alcohol. Like, I think there's a moment where we all take a shot and I think it was a real shot that we were.
Wow.
Of whiskey. You can do that kind of stuff on indie films and you can get away with it.
Well, you guys are in charge, so you're allowed to do that kind of
thing. Right. But the Gibson, I believe that's a true story that Jonathan brought into the script of, you know, there's this investment banker who he's trying to swindle some clients. And so he has them drinking martinis and he's got an onion in his drink. So he doesn't drink any booze. So he's just drinking water. And it's kind of the symbolism behind it has a lot to do with, manipulation, with lying. And of course we know that mixing up drinks comes back into play later on in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. Now also you had cocaine use in the movie. Obviously that wasn't, but it really looked like you guys were snorting it up. Was there kind of like a side gag of how to, like a camera move that you were able to do that? Because I don't want to see anybody snorting sugar or salt or anything like that.
Right.
Or baking powder.
Yeah.
It was, okay, we did a lot of research about like, what are the greats? What are they doing in movies when they're snorting coke? Like, I think it was like, there was something with, maybe it was one of the Godfather movies, but don't quote me on that, where somebody's snorting coke. And we were like, how are they pulling this off? And there are a lot of different ways that you can fake it, but what it came down to was we were going to have to actually snort something up our noses. So then the research becomes, what is the safest thing to snort up your nose? And that happens to be milk powder. So,
oh, okay.
Milk powder. Interesting.
We were trying this thing though, where our production designer, who she did an incredible job, Heidi Sneed, where we roll up the dollar bill and we coated the inside with like a thick layer of Vaseline. And the idea was that like, oh, well, when you go to snort it, it'll caught stick in to the Vaseline and it won't go in your nose. Well, it did not work. And I did get like, it was the grossest thing I've ever experienced. Like, I've never tried cocaine and I never will now, because just like snorting something up your nose is incredibly painful and uncomfortable. And I just, there was like all this like milk in my head. It was awful.
Yeah. No. Now, do you listen to any music to get into any sort of character? Just like, you know, did you do that for Zoe? Did you do that for Laura? Because honestly, throughout the movie had a lot of music within it. And it was a very broad and interesting kind of, because of the vinyl collection that Liam had. And that was also another distraction point from the conversation as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do use a lot of music for like character development. And, but this one in particular, our director, Jonathan, is a music fanatic. And so he actually created a Spotify playlist for me, for Zoe. Okay. And it really did come in handy with helping me like create a mood to create an environment. I think there was like some Bonnie Tyler on there. I did listen to a lot of the Velvet Underground for the movie. It just felt right.
Cool. Great. Now, the TV series Ember is in post-production. Is there a release time for that yet?
There isn't, but I'm really excited. That one, I believe we want to pitch. So I'm just an actor on that. I'm not helping produce.
Okay.
But we did, I think that they wanted to pitch it before seeing about releasing it. So I hopefully I'll have something else to bring to you guys soon. I'll keep you updated for sure.
And The Nine Realms, The Fateful Oath. It's a short movie that you completed. You play Mother. Can you talk about this and what it's about?
Yeah, that one's actually a really old project. It was a short I did a long time ago. I think it looks newer than it is on my IMDb. But it was like a period piece, which I really enjoyed doing. I'd really have to search to go find that project, to be honest. Yeah.
I thought I'd ask because I was curious about it. I read it and I looked into a few things and I was like, I should look for it. I can't find it.
Yeah, hard to find.
But you in your bio, you talk about going back into the groundlings. You went into the groundlings?
Yeah.
Which class was that? Is that a most recent class or are you still in it?
I was until like quarantine happened and I didn't get to finish my advanced class.
Oh, okay.
So I've been studying improv at the groundlings for about just like a little over a year and a half now.
Mm. Okay.
And it's been like the most fun part, like addition of my life. It's definitely helped free me up as an actor. It definitely helps me like not take myself too seriously, which I think actors absolutely cannot take themselves too seriously.
Do you see like a future in comedies or?
I am dying to do a comedy.
I think you'd be good at it actually.
Same here. Yeah.
I would love to do a comedy. I'm actually like a big goofball at heart. And honestly, I just like want to be an actor that just like does all kind of things that I want to be versatile, you know? Mm. And so I'd love for my next project to be a comedy actually.
Cool. That'd
be cool.
Yeah. A good rom-com would definitely do you.
Yeah,
good, I think because everybody's got that taste of Laura from The Walking Dead still in their mouth.
Hey, haircut.
You know, it's like, we like her now. But I'm sure a lot of people liked you towards the end because they saw the response at Walker Stalkers when I've seen you there. Mm-hmm. Everybody seems to enjoy your presence. And you always seem to dress so nice too. When I saw you there, you had a nice dress. And when I saw you in Atlanta, and I was, how tall is she? And I think you were wearing long heels when I saw you.
Was I? Oh yeah. My God! Wow.
I felt so short. I was like, oh wow.
Wait, which one? We must have met then at Bash.
This past,
yeah. Death Bash, was it?
No, I was never at Snowy Dead Bash. I was at in Atlanta in October when we had it this past in 2019. I didn't really have much time because I did a panel with Tony Moore. So, oh, yeah. And I was helping other people like Jason with his panels.
Yeah, and I only ever made one Walker Stalker, and that was in Orlando. So I always intended to go, and always something came up. Like 2019, my wife broke her ankle, so I couldn't go. We should tell listeners if they want to see Scorn, how would they do so?
So it's streaming right now on Amazon Prime. You can buy it for less than $5. Yep. And
that's what I did, by the way. I bought it.
Same here.
You guys are the best. It is only in the US and the UK, unfortunately, but if it does well here over the next few weeks, we really are prioritizing. We want to bring it internationally, so hopefully we'll be able to do that.
Awesome.
Great. Yeah. So it's just on Amazon that right now.
Correct.
Yeah.
At the moment. We have a few other platforms expressing interest in it. It's been doing really well. So it'd be great to bring it to a wider platform as well.
That'd be great. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. I thought the ending was rather surprising.
Yeah.
And it kind of fit into the title, I think, really well.
Definitely.
So what else do you have? Well, obviously with the COVID-19 stuff, things are kind of coming to a halt. But like, what do you have coming up? What are you planning to work on? Anything else that...
Anything you want to plug that you're doing currently while you're in quarantine? Obviously, people are doing Cameo, I think it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on Cameo.
Okay. So people could check you out there and have a one-on-one. Are you doing online conventions? Because I know Ross Marquand and a few other actors are doing things, and then there are other people who are going to Wizard World. Are you doing any of those where it's like a virtual meet and greet?
Yeah, you know, I'm not doing any of the online conventions at the moment. I do some personal videos through Cameo, and I maybe not a lot of people know this, but I do have some people that I privately coach for acting calls. Oh. So I do some of that with people. I mean, a lot of them have been fans that have expressed interest in learning how to act. So I do some consultations and some video coaching for stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But as far as future projects come up, as far as they go, it's like, it's a weird time. You know, it's like such a liability for any of us to be on set together.
Yeah.
I do have some meetings this week that I'm excited about. Mm-hmm. Can you guys hear the fireworks? It's 8 p.m. here and everybody's cheering.
Awesome.
So I don't really know what the next project is going to be. I don't know if it'll be something I produce. I don't know if it's something that I'll be cast in. Just know that I am a busybody and I love my work. So it'll be something sooner rather than later. Mm.
Maybe.
Well, that's great. Keep in touch so we can plug when you've got some new stuff coming up.
Exactly.
So if fans want to get a hold of you, I know you're on Instagram because that's kind of how I found you. But if fans want to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
Yeah, the best way, I'm on a lot of the platforms. So you can find me on Instagram at Lindsley Register. I'm on Twitter at Lindsley Reggie. And I do some YouTube here and there. Whenever I feel like sharing things from my life, I'll post on YouTube. And Facebook, if you're still on Facebook, I'm also there too.
Yeah. All right, cool. Is there anything else you want to say? Or
let me just say, like, thank you so much to the Walking Dead family, because I mean, they've been the biggest supporters of Scorn. Like, they've been asking me about Scorn for literally years.
Wow.
Since I've been talking about, literally years. And so it was really important for me to finish this project and be able to bring it to them. And they've just been like so incredible. So thank you so much for supporting it, for sharing it in your Instagram stories and tweeting about it and all of the things. It, like, I mean, my heart is so full. And yeah, thanks to you guys for having me on the show.
It was our pleasure.
Thank you.
You're a great guest. So, all right. So I guess that's it. So, thank you so much.
Take care of yourselves. Okay.
Yeah,
we will.
Sure.
We will.
Crazy times.
Yes, it is.
All right.
All right.
We'll talk soon.
Okay.
All right.
Great. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Okay. So this is where we usually end things. So how do people get a hold of us?
Well, we always want to encourage our listeners to follow us on Twitter. And you can find us at Walking Dead GSM. And to submit your theories and feedback, most people post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. You could also email us at walkingdead@talkthroughmedia.com. And there's a feedback form on talkthroughmedia.com, and that's talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. Or you could call us at 216-232-6146. 216-232-6146. Act now.
Now, one thing I'm going to say is probably at some point very soon, probably after we release this, we're going to change our Twitter handle and our Facebook to from Walking Dead GSM to what it should be now, which is Walking Dead TTM. But I know if you go to the Facebook group and you say GSM, it will refer you back to Walking Dead TTM once we set that up. But yeah, it's about time we did that. So it's getting close to a year since we...
It's almost a year.
Yeah. And we're going to do something special with this episode. We are going to release the video of this episode on YouTube, and we might put it on our Facebook group as well. I'll have to see if I can swing that or not. Yeah, so... You may see that at on the Facebook page, which would be facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. And it'll be there on our network page, and it'll also be available on the in the Facebook group. Speaking of that, like and review the Talk Through Media page, which is at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. And the best way you can support us is through our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/walkingdeadtalkthrough. And we would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Steve Brown, Alex Baelish, and Lawrence Todd. And you can subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. We're also, you can rate us and review us at Podchaser, and you can That's at podchaser.com, and you can actually rate and review the individual episodes there. And remember to share our posts on Twitter and Facebook when we post them, and especially tell a friend. Word of mouth is the best way to get new listeners. So, and you know, we didn't even mention it, but Kyle was unavailable tonight. So I just realized that. It's like people are probably wondering, where is Kyle? Kyle was unavailable. So, and I'm not podcasting on Star Trek these days, so I'm back on The Walking Dead. But, and speaking of that, we are still releasing episodes on the Star Trek Picard cast. We just released an episode on Saturday, which was an interview with Una McCormack, who is the author of Star Trek Picard, The Last Best Hope. And our Patreon for that is going to be doing a call-in show on Saturday, the 16th of May. And we will be covering, actually talking about that book. And then on May 23rd, we're going to be doing a roundtable finally on season one. So it's like we've had like now a couple of months since Picard ended, but we're going to finally do our roundtable. And that's it for me. We will be, of course, doing the Star Trek Discovery podcast when Discovery comes back. Mark, I know you've got two projects that you can talk about.
Yeah, definitely. Well, for the most part, you can find me on Panels to Pixels. We're still putting out episodes per week, and obviously, I am working on an edit tonight before we finish. We're continuing on with our Twitcher reviews, and after that, we will continue on probably with a short project. We're trying to get a guest, celebrity guests as well on that. You could also hear me on Let's Talk Through. Kyle and I are working on a new possible episode, so that way you'll have something, because right now with a talkthroughmedia.com network, we only have a few episodes right now, so we want to fill that so you have something to listen to and be entertained within this whole quarantine and this whole new reality that we have with masks.
Yeah, and I will probably be joining for the next Let's Talk Through. I will be a guest on that once we figure out what we're going to talk about. But
we have so many options and a variety of different things.
Yeah.
So if you guys have a topic that you would like us to talk about on Let's Talk Through, always send a comment on our Talk Through Media Facebook page or on the Let's Talk Through Facebook page. Mm-hmm. So that way we'll take whatever recommendations you have that you want to listen up to hear us talk about.
Yeah. And also Panels Pixels.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. We always take recommendations.
Yeah.
So
our next episode, at least as far as The Walking Dead, is season 10, episode 16, the season finale, which is Displaced. And we should have already seen it already, but coronavirus.
Yeah, they have another 2 weeks of post-production, so.
Yeah. It's titled A Certain Doom. The story is by Jim Barnes, Eli Jornet, I believe it's Jornet, and Corey Reed. And the teleplay is by Corey Reed. And it's directed by Greg Nicotero, and we don't have the description for it. But that's it for now. It was great having Lindsley Register on tonight. It's our first interview in a long time. We had one way, way back when Ruthie was on the show. She interviewed Vincent M. Ward. So this is like the first one we've done in like 4 years, but it was great to have her on. And again, her movie is called Scorn, and it's available on Amazon Video, as she said, in the US and the UK. And you can rent it, I believe, for $1.99, and you can purchase it for $4.99. So, I mean, that's a pretty good deal. So I just went ahead and bought it.
Same here.
Yeah. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Mark.
And this is The Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Good night.